the Vox Markets podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and by popular demand, I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Ian Strafford-Taylor and CFO Richard Cooper of Equals, a leading international e-payments and fintech platform. So welcome, gents.
Hi, Paul. Good to be here.
Yeah, well, it looks as though you've been super busy over the last 3 months or so, not least today's sort of like hat-tipping 2022 results and an excellent start to 2023. So maybe, Ian, we can begin there. I don't suppose you could sort of quickly remind investors of Equals as a sort of key USPs and the drivers behind the sort of strong top-line growth in the first quarter.
For sure. I mean, Equals is now, as you said, it's a B2B, so all our customers, or the majority of our customers, are corporates and businesses, payments company. And what we do in essence is make it much easier for businesses to move their money around, be that in the UK or internationally. And I know that sounds trivial, but it really isn't. It gets complicated when you've got cross currencies, lots of people paying you, lots of people to pay. Reconciliation is a problem. Recognizing inbound funds is a problem. We solve all of those types of problems with the various products that we have. And not only can we support moving money from bank account to bank account, but also we have a card platform as well. That's all part of the same thing. So you can pay out by a card or by bank transfer, which is kind of unique.
Yeah, and then, I mean, the broader market for payments seems to be growing at sort of high single digit, double digit, sort of, you know, sort of 10% perhaps. But you're growing at sort of 50%, and I'm sort of scratching my head. And also, you've got this sort of, you designed the platform particularly for, say, B2B SME market, but it seems to be just knocking the ball out of the park with large corporates. So you seem to have done, you've seemed to have exceeded your design application.
Well, we haven't exceeded our design in terms of scalability of the platform. It's important to emphasize that, Paul. You know, the platform itself was built for scale. You know, but this investment journey started, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. Now it's bearing the fruit that we believe that it would and that shareholders can see. So, yeah, payments, I think maybe you take a step back, payments as a whole, for so long, you know, we got all this clever technology around most things that we do, but payments still clear along very antiquated rails. And it was ripe for a form of disruption, but no one could afford to do it. And, you know, what we're doing is taking existing infrastructure, applying tech to it, applying know-how, applying direct connections where we can to just simplify all of that. And ultimately, if you're a small or large or a very large business, that if you can move your money quicker in and out, it enables you to manage your working capital better, which, you know, most businesses that go out of business, it's for lack of cash, right? So you can see the benefits of all of this. We are outperforming the more general payments market, but payments in general is a hot space for investment right now.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, just shift into the actual results, Richard. I suppose you just give us a quick sort of like the quick highlights, particularly sort of like looking at the, you know, the operating gearing and the cash generation, because, I mean, just doing the maths, just in that quarter one, it seems as though you're generating about £1 million worth of cash a month now. Richard?
Yes, absolutely. So there are three key financial messages. Not least that revenue has been growing, but revenue has been growing at an increasing margin. Coupled with strong cost control means that our EBITDA has been increasing, but not at the expense of making internal investments in our product. And all of that has led to an increasing cash balance, as you've just alluded to, which means that we've been able to fund acquisitions out of our cash balance. So revenue up, margins up, profit up, cash up, available for growth, for purchasing new things.
Yeah, I did see, if we look at the H1, H2 split for last year, your gross margin has actually increased from about just over 47% first half to about 48, 49% in the second half, plus your EBITDA did double that, as in terms of it went from about sort of 15, 16% to about 19%. So you just say this cost management, you're doing it both on the, you know, on the cost of goods sold and on your operating level, aren't you? On your sort of operating expenses.
Yes, we are. And we've not been shy in saying that as we evolve our solutions business and evolve our white label business, we expected margins to increase, and they've done so.
Mm. And going forward, I know it's early days in 2023 and 2024, but in terms of those margins, given Ian is bringing in absolutely boatloads of new business, and if you keep that sort of sales rate increasing, I'm guessing wouldn't it be crazy to think the margins are like, certainly the EBITDA margins are likely to increase?
Absolutely. You know, we are very resolutely gearing ourselves up to get an EBITDA margin that begins with a 2. That's our focus. It might take a little longer, but that's absolutely our focus.
Brilliant. Okay. Now, Ian, the other big news is the Unex, or certainly the M&A, actually. You've certainly done a lot of corporate activity, but let's start with the Unex acquisition out in Belgium. What strategically does it give sort of like Eagles?
I mean, that acquisition, obviously, it is subject to approval by the Belgian regulator, the National Bank of Belgium, which can take a while, but we're in good dialogue with them. I think that's transformational for the company. I honestly do, because post Brexit, regardless of your opinion of Brexit, it happened. We don't have, well, in fact, we have ever decreasing access to the European economies, and they're vast, and especially the bloc as a whole is vast. So we need a route into there, not just for our legacy products, but also for the solutions platform. Why? Because right now, without getting overly technical, but the IBAN I keep banging on about, if you issue IBANs out of the UK, it starts with a GB. Mm. And you need a European prefixed IBAN. So we'll get BE IBANs, for instance, because of the Unex acquisition, such that you can actually do business in Europe. So the size of the market is massive. We already have a lot of demand for it. I've got customers that say, well, if you could do a European IBAN, I can do X, Y, Z more with you. So it's not... it's not a land and expand and have a look. It's a certain knowledge that we know that expanding our profile such that we can sell our wares and particularly the solutions product, but actually all our products across Europe, is a massive thing for us.
Massive. Yeah. So let's just say, for instance, I'm a large corporate in the UK, but I also have bases out in Europe. You're saying that because you've got that relationship, particularly in the UK, they could then just easily, simply lift and shift what they have over to Europe and just change the GB to a BE.
Yeah, and another boringly technical point, but merchant acquirers will only pay into an own name account. That was part of the reason why we did the own name IBANs. But many of them will only pay into an IBAN that's prefixed in the country in which that company is domiciled, if you get my drift.
Yeah.
So. Right now, we're restricted in terms of what we can do because it's UK businesses, which is great. And you can see the growth we managed to achieve by doing that. But just imagine what we could do with unfettered access across all 27 member states of the EU.
Fabulous. Okay, then Richard, just on that Unex acquisition, I know it's early days and we haven't actually completed it. It's all subject to regulator and all that kind of stuff. But if assuming that things do go to plan, what sort of financial impact would you see over the next 2 to 3 years? How could it be probably transformational for the company?
Well, I would point to how we've done in our UK-based solutions business in the last year. We've grown it from 3 million to 15 million in the period of 1 year. And that's effectively a single geography. So then when you open the kimono up into Europe, and see what could be the art of the possible. And remember, solutions have been growing rapidly. And Ian's pointed out in his RNS how much solutions has grown in the first 3 months of this year. This is a very, very positive step. And to use Ian's words, I think transformational for the company.
Yeah.
Just to add a little bit on that. I mean, Unex, has the licenses that we require. It has existing banking relationships, which are deep and great, and with banks that we don't currently have. So it's another positive there. It also has a merchant acquiring product, which we don't have, which will sit perfectly alongside Rocket. So we'll now have two routes by which we can help our B2B customers get paid by their end consumer. So quite apart from the solutions business we can put through it, it's a fantastic acquisition on its own. But when we look at the numbers that are, and the art of the possible in, let's say, 2024, you know, it gets seriously exciting. And we're being conservative in how we're projecting it internally.
Yeah. Okay, then just turning to Rocket. I know we've bought that one, and it's you've got the FCA approval, I think it was in January. How are we getting? How are you getting on with this, largely the integration with that, and being able to sort of like transact inbound cash movements for our customers?
Well, the first phase that we set for Rocket was to basically put the Rocket platform live if you're a customer of the Fairfax currency card. The B2C card that we have, such that you can pay via Rocket. And that is live. I tested it myself on Friday, so I know it's live. So that's the first thing. And the reason that's important is that we can then say to B2B customers, look, it works for us. It can work for you. This is a way that you can get paid quicker, cheaper, easier than accepting card-based payments. Of course, many people will still want to use cards, and hence why the merchant acquiring capability that Oonex has is just another string to our bow, and enables us to do more stuff for our customers. But no, the first piece of Rocket is live, which is fantastic.
And right. I would just add to that to say that, you know, we have moved out a mature travel business for broadly the same revenue and EBITDA in 2022 as we expect to get from Rocket in 2023. And obviously Rocket is, you know, a much more exciting prospect than a mature travel business. So, you know, for 2022, think neutral. For 2023, think significantly positive. Sorry, for 2023, think neutral. For 2024, think significantly positive in that asset swap, effectively.
Yeah,
Paul, if you think about it, in Q1, we've effectively bought or completed on one and bought two. That's three businesses we bought, and we sold one.
Yeah, like I was going to say, you've got pretty
that's a
busy
lot,
there.
Isn't it? And actually, if you dig beneath them, you know, Oonex we've talked about, but that's, you know, buying capability and geography and license. Hamer and Hamer, which I guess we can talk a bit more detail in a second, is what we've done before, buying an excellent B2B international payments business, dropping it on our platform. We can do it, you know, so long as we get good value, let's do them, move on. Rocket, we've shown that we can integrate new tech rapidly into our stack by having that live. And the cash business, we've showed that, you know, we're relentlessly focused, you know, on the B2B slash, you know, where we can add value type journey. And that was a non-core activity. So we dispersed it and so that, you know, it's not a distraction anymore. So I think it's kind of reminds shareholders of all of our priorities there in the transactions that we've done all in one quarter.
Yeah, and I think as Richard was saying, it's for 2024, it's takeoff, isn't it, with those results? With
Rocket. Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of looking forward, you know, our focus has to be, because of the scale of Oonex and the possibility, you know, we'll be relentlessly focused on making that work as soon as we get, assuming we get the green light from the MBB.
Yeah. And just, Richard, just on Hamer and Hamer, et cetera, obviously that looks like a good bolt-on acquisition. Can you just take us through the strategic logic on that one?
Well, firstly, there's the industrial logic, because this taps into a different type of client base that we didn't already have. Secondly, the team that we're taking on fit very nicely with our entrepreneurial culture. Thirdly, the numbers make sense.
Great. Okay.
And fourthly, We are, you know, bringing on people, not just the founders of Hamer and Hamer, but additional talent into our team, which should help grow other things as well.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to meeting Mr. Hamer and Hamer later on. Now, Richard, just in terms of other sort of like investments, I know you're keeping a tight ship in terms of the cash and the costs and stuff like that. But you've obviously done a lot on the M&A, which has all been self-funding. In terms of other sort of like investments, what should people expect? Just more business as usual stuff?
Well, we've decided not to pursue the acquisition for Credit Suisse.
Yeah, don't do Deutsche Bank either, please.
And Deutsche Bank, you know, they just weren't returning our calls. but other than that, this again, I think, casts our net into the wider industry of looking at, you know, other Hamer and Hamers. Done this, we could do some of that because the compliance burden is quite tough. We can't really market. We've got a big brand behind us. You know, when I was in the gaming industry, the things that used to worry us were that we couldn't keep up with the real big boys on marketing spend. Mm. You know, now we are ourselves becoming a big boy, which should allow us to be a more attractive partner and acquirer for these small self-standing FX businesses or tech like Rocket.
Mm. And what just turning shifting gears in terms of sort of regulation, compliance, stuff like that. There was something I think which came out on the FT, I think, a couple of weeks ago. I'm guessing that actually plays to your hand because as you grow and you invest in your compliance, it's going to make, you know, it equals even more.
It does. But, you know, obviously, I think on these interviews over the last 2 or 3 years, you know, I've probably alluded to what worries me is that someone would blow up and it might affect everybody who has e-money licenses or payment licenses. Absolutely, we welcome it. And it can only be good. But obviously it raises an immediate question. People, oh God, you know, payments, this is healthy. This is natural that the FCA recognize the importance of businesses that are operating in this space. So it's not just banks. I mean, banks, yes, deposit money and, you know, lend money. You know, we enable money to move around easier, and you can't just regulate one and sort of turn a blind eye to the other. So we're hugely supportive of what they're trying to do. We have, touch wood, a good relationship with the FCA. We have nothing to fear from this type of process. We see, you know, some of the business that we turn away that ends up at another place, and you think, you know, there are some less well-run businesses than ours out there, and I'd be delighted if that is, you know, the herd is thinned somewhat. So it's natural selection, it's very Darwinian. So yeah. Generally that a letter like that, I think you can view it as a precursor that allows the FCA to go into wherever they feel like. On the back of that, they've kind of given themselves reason. Do you see what I'm saying? All good.
Yeah, well, if nothing else, it should whittle away the sort of like, you know, the tail of potential, you know, people who can't afford the regulatory cost.
You take that, the tech you need, you know, you've got all sorts of regulations, you've got consumer duty coming in. There's a lot of stuff out there in terms of not just reg, but compliance. And if you're a small standalone business, it's hard to keep up with all of that.
Yeah, and all the cost and stuff like that. In fact, I don't think even Silicon Valley Bank could afford a risk manager, could it? So that's why it had problems. But regardless of that, just on the sort of the banking crisis, have you seen any sort of behavioural patterns, any spending changes at all in the customers over the last few weeks?
Not really. I mean, ultimately, you know, I think you and I are old enough to have seen things like this before. I mean, this is, to me, the press are overdoing it somewhat, and you know, it's all getting a little bit silly because it, you know, it was a specialist lender who had liquidity problems. It, you know, it happens, right? Credit Suisse admitted to having accountancy issues, and so you know, people looking around for, oh, do I want my money there? People get nervous, but they're putting their money somewhere else. It's not that the banks have systemically overextended themselves. So I think it ought to go away. The thing that happened immediately was, if you are a fintech and you had your money deposited with SVB, you probably only had one place you could deposit. So suddenly you want to take your money out of there, but put it where? Mm. And to set up with an incumbent bank takes forever. So we did see some, you know, flow in, but it's not permanent money. It's not really a core customer necessarily. You know, we're not a deposit taker. That's not what we do. We make money or aspire to make money by having flow through fixed plant. And the more flow, the more money we make. So no, we've not seen a massive effect. Certainly not a negative one.
And Paul, just to give, you know, people some reassurance, where do we have our money? And actually, just to refresh, as of last Friday, we had 10p per share in our free flow cash.
Yeah.
And that cash is held with BlackRock, Citibank, Barclays, NatWest.
Okay. Good.
10p per share.
Okay, good. As long as it's not, you didn't say First Republic Signature Bank.
We could have deposited at SVB. They offered very attractive rates.
Oh, okay, yeah. But that sounds like Northern Rock.
But, you know, Richard and myself and, you know, the team are cautious by nature, you know, in terms of that hard-earned and shareholder hard-earned cash. You know, if something looks too good to be true, maybe it is.
Yeah. Now, just, again, to turn into sort of a more strategic, broader picture, in terms of the sort of like distribution strategy, I saw in your statement you had sort of like four legs to the actual distribution, but now you may have a fifth one, I guess, overseas. But can you just quickly take us through that?
What I'm trying to land with investors and more widely now is that we have at the heart of Equals what we call Equals Core, which is all the licenses, the settlement rails, the tech, settlements themselves, operations, compliance, all of those things as a kind of central department that provides those services. And we can distribute those services in four ways, now become five. I'll come to the fifth shortly. So number one is ourselves directly. So international payments, the corporate expense card solutions, Equals Money, all of these things effectively consume resource from the core. So we sell directly to our customers, spend some marketing money, fantastic. The next level is to direct to customers but via API. So it's a technical integration. They use everything that we have, but they consume it via a computer link, if you want to think of it that way. So we don't really have to talk to them. You know, it happens on a weekend. It's automatic. They use everything that's in the core via that type of link. The third way is white label, similar to that API thing, but different in that we are branding the whole thing up. We handle to the customer on behalf of our customer. So, you know, everything is white label. The fourth way, which is very similar and also depends on API, but there could be, one of my guys calls it bring your own license, right? So it could be they have license or this in another jurisdiction that we don't want to go into, or we're happy to let them compete with us. So we can let them use bits of the core, again, via API link, rather than all of it. Maybe they have their own settlement rails. There's ways to slice and dice it. We don't have that live yet, but that's the direction of travel. The others we do. And then on top of that, those four ways to distribute, you've then got geographic. So you take all of those four concepts and then wrap a geographic wrapper on it. You start to get excited. So that's why, going back to the early part of the chat, you know, Unex is so important for us. And, you know, concurrent to all of that and the stuff that we've built, you know, we hired a chief commercial officer towards the end of H1 last year. We've got way better sales discipline now, way better pipeline management. You know, I can see forwards and be justifiably enthused.
Brilliant. Okay, then just finally then, Richard, just wrapping all that up, in terms of what sort of you know, investors should think about in terms of the sort of the outlook for 2023 and 2024, just a bit of a summary, and likewise the news flow. I guess you've probably got, there'll be the Unex completion and then the AGM as well later on in the next 3 months or so.
Well, I think our brokers will be reissuing a note, you know, following this announcement. And I think it would be slightly premature to to judge that, but we definitely expect them to give quite a material upgrade.
Yeah. Okay, and then your terms of the timing for your AGM, is that going to be sort of May, June time, is it, I guess?
16th of May.
Yeah, and when will be the next trading update? Is it likely to be sort of like
May?
Oh, okay, right, fine. Okay. That's easy.
Yeah, but I think it is what, you know, I mean, we've not talked about the Q1 numbers in any depth, really, more about what we did in Q1. But, I mean, we're very pleased with that, you know, given everything that's going on and that kind of growth year on year. So, we have reasons to look forward positively.
Brilliant. So, okay, well, just to summarise for investors, I mean, I've put my own personal sort of numbers together, and I'm getting for sales for this year and 89.5 million and an EBITDA of 16.5 million pounds with a target price or a valuation of 160p per share. And I've split this sort of first half, second half for this year at 43.5 million sales, and then second half 46 million. And I'm pretty comfortable with that, just for sort of give people an indication, a benchmark. But obviously those are my own, you know, estimates, and I haven't had a chance to rationalize those against broker forecasts. So
we haven't hung up.
No, exactly.
So it can't be that ridiculous.
Okay, all right then. Well, thanks very much, gents. Absolutely terrific start to the year and set of results, and clearly strategically even more positive, particularly for 2024. So look forward to the 15th of May then, guys.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay, thanks, Paul.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.